Podcast People's Podcast. Hello and welcome to a breaking news edition of What Most People Think, and it is on. It is on. General election going down 4th of July live on Sky pay-per-view. We're going to have it in Saudi Arabia, like the boxing. It's where it took everybody by surprise, and we'll get onto that. But I want to deal with something straight out of the gate, all right? Is that Rishi came out and he called it at 5 p.m. He stood outside number 10 in the pissing rain. And a lot of people said, what a terrible strategic error. What terrible optics. What a terrible aesthetic. What a terrible analogy. And, you know, I don't know if I'm becoming defensive of Rishi because everyone's bullying him. But I sort of thought logically, right, once he's announced it, he said it's going to be at 5 p.m. OK, if you're the Prime Minister, you got to do it outside, okay? Once you've decided you're going to do it outside, if you make people wait, everyone say, oh, look, he's scared. If you do it indoors, people say he's scared. If you have someone holding a brolly, you'd say he looks like a private school kid or even smaller than he is. I think he had to do it. I think he had to do it in the rain. And you know why he did it in the rain? Because he's a real man. He's a real man, yeah? If you're saying, oh, well, I'd have had a brolly, yeah, that's why Rishi Sunak is Prime Minister, because he's enough of a man to just stand there in the pissing rain with music blasting out, heckling him. I mean, honestly, I know that some of you listening will really despise Rishi Sunak. I'm not sure he's a despisable person. He's irritating. But just think, with music blasting out and it raining, how far would you have got into that announcement before you'd have said, fuck this, right? I would have said, fuck this. I would have kicked the lectern over. I would have just gone and just slammed my head against the door of number 10. A corporate gig, right? Or any gig. If a couple of people are talking in the front row, or even if I can see somebody's Apple Watch light up, I get distracted. So God knows how you cope with somebody playing a hilarious song. I mean, can we just deal with the music thing, right? This guy, the Stop Brexit guy, Steve Bray, I mean, for the last few big announcements outside number 10, Steve Bray has been playing his hilarious comedy songs. And far be it from me to, you know, piss on the undoubted comedic genius of just playing a song. I just would quite like to hear what people are saying at important moments in our history. And it is this weird thing about a liberal democracy, is that you can just have one person that just rocks up and just fucking affects history. Look, this guy is doing it for clicks, all right? He's doing it to build his following and stuff. Maybe at the beginning he was ideologically motivated, but he's like all of us, right? We're just trying to get a bit of attention. But one thing I do think about this fella is that once a Labour government comes in, he might have to go and get a real job again. Maybe it's because of my political bias. I just didn't find it that funny. You know, people who found the Things Can Only Get Better song funny, the kind of people who also thought Boaty McBoatface was the height of British satire. But look, I must admit, when it played back on the news and I heard the clips they played on Times Radio, they played three separate clips of Sunak talking and you could hear Things Can Only Get Better in the background. And I've got to be honest, by the third one, I did sort of find it quite funny. So we'll get on to a deep dive analysis of all the other things coming out of the election announcement. Starmer's response. Was it a good decision? Do all the Tory MPs now hate Rishi? We'll talk about all of that. And this will be your election podcast. I'm totally nicking that from Times Radio. They very smartly said, this is your election station. I'm saying this is your election podcast. And I'm going to be going, I'm going to try and do extra shows all the way up till the election. Just taking a piss, really. This hopefully will be your talk. Given that, as we discussed this week in the episode with Ian Stone, which, by the way, everyone was saying was one of the funniest ones this year, there's way less topical satirical shows on TV and radio. So this is where you need to come if you just want to do the very British thing of taking the piss out of all of it. And of course, if you want it early, ad-free, and with bonus content, go to Patreon and join up. Loads of benefits. Not least that you can DM me. Although I will withdraw those privileges if you send dick pics. Okay, even though it's a breaking news, of course, we're going to do a thank you and a fuck you. The thank you is to the film The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now, I was doing a couple of bits of recording ahead of the records for my series, Jeff Norcott's Working Men's Club, which, by the way, is happening in Leeds on the 4th and the 24th of June. If you want to be in the mix for free tickets for that, get on Standing Room Only tickets website. Google Standing Room Only. So it'll be free tickets and I'll do two shows and it'll basically be like stand-up. You know, stand up with a bit of audience interaction. I think you'll enjoy it, especially as it's free. And it's in Leeds. And you like that sort of stuff, don't you? In Yorkshire, what, free? Fucking freebies, Jeff. Obviously, Jeff Boycott's going to come. But anyway, so I was recording that. And to get the authentic vibe that we're recording in a working men's club, I had a couple of pints. And then I had a gap till my gig in the evening. And I was a bit pissed. So I went to the cinema and watched Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And I really was a bit drunk, actually, because when I arrived, I got the biggest thing of nachos you've ever seen. And I just sat down with a tray of nachos in front of me. And you know, there's that drunk hunger. I ate every single jalapeno on there. I ate all of the sauce. And even, you know what the disgusting thing I did? Was when the nachos had run out, there was still some salsa and some avocado. And you know what I did? You know what I did? I used my finger to scoop up what was left. Don't act fucking superior to me. You've done that. What I liked about the film, not least the CGI, and they're obviously building up a trilogy here, and it had some quite good mythology, was they had a female lead in it, and they really went back to that sort of 1960s damsel in distress thing, where even though she was lost in the forest and stuff, she still had tousled hair and like lipstick on. I thought, what a great nod back to our sexist heritage. It sort of became clear later in the film why that was the case. But at the beginning, I thought it was just like, you know, I don't know, Bridget Bardot, or you know, those kind of those old disaster films where the woman is like, she's been thrown out of a plane, but she's still got like a fucking bouffant and mascara on. I mean, obviously, being a modern film, it turned out she wasn't exactly a damsel in distress. It turned out that she was sort of like a damsel looking to save humanity. But, you know, just for a while, she was lost in a forest with lovely makeup on, looking pretty. Okay. The fuck you is to people who leave litter on a train. I mean, I have mentioned this before, but I've been on a few trains recently. I just don't get it. You walk past a bin. When you get off a train, there is a bin by every single door. Why do you think you're a restaurant? You think, well, you came on with a bag of Burger King. What, you think there's going to be some little food minion that comes on and just sweeps it all up? It is so... Where are the public education campaigns? You know, Starmer, in his first election video, he sort of spoke about antisocial behaviour. Where has the government gone with... Because, you know, during COVID, they were happy to scare the shit out of us about anything, weren't they? We're told that there's an obesity epidemic. Well, where are the adverts to tell us to stop eating, right? Where are they? If it's an epidemic, the last time there was an epidemic or a pandemic, you told us to stay inside our houses and we couldn't attend funerals. So what about this epidemic? Suddenly, when it comes to telling people to lay off the Five Guys, they get a bit fucking cautious, don't they? And what about a Keep Britain Tidy campaign? I remember those when I was a kid. They worked. Just, again, scare people. You did it during COVID. Just scare people, right? Just show a group of like people in their early 20s on the train. So they get up, right? And then somehow one of the bags kind of like gets caught on a breeze and it drifts all the way through to the driver's thing and it goes over his face and then there's a train crash. That's what they'd have done in the 80s. Do you remember that? You know, with the gas leaks and the fireworks. And do you remember that one where the kid goes to walk across a field and there's a power cable above him and he's got a fishing rod and he just gets fucking, he gets fried like halloumi on a fucking barbecue, right? Where is the fear? That's what I say. So if Starmer is going to win this election, I'd like to see a return to adverts which scare the shit out of young people.
What most people think.
All right, let's get into it. Let's unpick all the issues around Rishi's snap, premature eloculation. Okay, before we get into the political logic of calling it for July the 4th, can we just acknowledge that for a lot of people, this is a bollocake, right? MPs, both sides of the House, from what I'm hearing, are absolutely furious about it. And look, from a personal level, I wanted a longer lead into this. I had projects, I had irons in the fire, and Rishi Sunak might have blown a couple of those out of the water. So you know what? Fuck the Tories, man. Fuck the Tories. How dare you, Rishi? We were all an autumn one. We had time to lead into it. I had time to have meetings. But did you text me? Oh, no. One of the few comedians that might give you a fair hearing, but you didn't reach out to him, Jeff, did you? But anyway, let's get into the politics of it. All right. So on Wednesday, speculation was growing from the morning. A PMQ's the SNP leader in the House of Commons, Stephen Pocket Plonker Flynn, asked in his usual way, which is very eloquent. He basically, he sort of just was very human about it. He said, are you going to call an election? you know, which Keir Starmer could have done, but obviously didn't. And Rishi sort of laughed and went, spoiler alert, it's still going to be in the second half of the year. Now, can we just deal with the second half of the year thing? It is in the second half of the year, right? You can't call him a liar. It literally is in the second half of the year. If I was 40 years old, right, and then a week later, I said I was in my 40s, you wouldn't say, no, oh, only, you'd know. You're just in your 40s, okay? It's in the second half of the year. And respect to Rishi as well, I have to say, for lying to the loose women. I mean, he was on that show last week and he said, oh, yeah, book your holidays because it's going to be later in the year. And he just lied to their faces. And the way I see it, any man that can lie to the loose women, these fearsome, formidable women, he can stand up to Putin. He can stand up to Russian aggression. He can stand up to anything. If you're willing to lie to Janet Street Porter, or maybe that was just his revenge for her asking him why he hates pensioners. Hates them. Now, was it a good decision? I think it could be a logical decision, but also born of desperation, right? So they were looking for a moment in time, an inflection point. Should we start using a political jargon here? They were looking for a moment where something turned, right? So you've had this little trio of economic news, which is that the economy is growing. Inflation is down to like 2.3%. I think even the recession, Rishi's recession, Labour are just going to keep putting names of stuff in front of stuff. Rishi's recession, Liz's mortgage premium. But what about positive stuff? Are they going to name that too? You know, with inflation going down, are they going to call it Hunt's deflation? Which sort of sounds like a fucking, like a Victorian ailment. Oh, he was suffering from Hunt's deflation. His penis had lost 40% of its mass. So there's a point where things have got slightly better, right? And then they realised, I think, the logic had been for a while is if we leave it, then things might improve. But what had happened was they'd already left it and things were just getting worse, right? More defections, more MPs retiring, and God knows what else would happen. They think, all right, by the autumn, let's be honest, what other mad shit could happen? Will one of our MPs get his cock out on Snapchat or something and it gets screenshotted? Yes, that's eminently possible. You know, let's see if we can go now and have a defeat that's not as bad. But it clearly pulled the rug on his colleagues a little bit, not least David Cameron, who was doing pretty much like a state visit in Albania. I don't know if you've seen the footage of this or the pictures, but like there were Union Jacks everywhere and there was like a kind of massive photo of David Cameron there. What was it? Is he just blagged them? Has he just told them that like not only is he not just Foreign Secretary or Prime Minister, he is the Emperor of Britannia. It was a very strange thing, but he got called back from Albania. James Cleverly was on Peston and he clearly, when asked, did you know about this? I mean, he clearly was like, you know, look, hey, there was, you know, the Prime Minister is a very private man. He had to kind of work around it. And it pulled, I think, the rug on his own colleagues more than Labour. I think Labour have been sort of set up to fight a general election for quite some time now. And probably staying in that state of readiness was probably exhausting them. So it coming now probably does them a favour. But the Tory MPs, you know, some of whom would be updating their CVs on LinkedIn, some of them, you know, might now be unemployed for a while. It's fair to say, from what I'm hearing, the anger is huge. But he came out and did his speech and he looked, I mean, at first, the tone of his speech, it looked like it was going to be a resignation speech. I mean, it had a tone of resignation and it looked like he might actually just quit. Yeah, I mean, just that fucking music playing. I mean, is it really that funny? Am I just being a killjoy here? I think that this is moments where dictators must just be pissing themselves. You know what I mean? Vladimir Putin watching this going, look at these idiots. Because of their love of liberal democracy, one guy who wants to build the internet following can play stupid song and ruin moment for a leader. You're so funny. How quickly, guys, how quickly would we have electrocuted that guy? I'm not even joking. You know, we'd have come up with a little syringe. It would be good night, Vienna. Which reminds me, can we also invade Vienna? So in his speech, he drew our attention back to furlough, right? He's like, remember furlough? Remember the last time I was popular? You can tell that people are a bit rattled by that, because immediately I saw various kind of political commentators. And I mean, one thing I've noticed as well is the level of bias has ramped up immediately. Like the moment he said furlough, people going, just your little reminder that Rishi didn't actually give you money. I'm like, first off, if I wanted reminders, I wouldn't go to social media. I'm on social media literally for shit that's happened in the last 3 minutes, right? Your reminder that in 2020, who gives a fuck about that? All right. I haven't got that kind of memory. With furlough, Rishi was instrumental in creating that. You know, bowl accounts, he was across the detail to a large extent. I think from an economically right-wing point of view, I'd say it was a bit too generous, right? Because one thing they never factored in was that everyone was going to save shitloads of money on travel, right? Travel and just being able to eat microwave soup at home. You know, £1 a can versus £9 at Pret. I think that they should have had a prep premium on it and reduced it accordingly. Because, you know, I mean, we always need to remember that the British public saved shitloads of money during the lockdowns. What does that tell you? Maybe the terms of it were too generous. But there is no memory currently in politics for anything, you know, or the fact that the Tories basically put money in people's accounts more than any government in history, right? For furlough, cold weather payments, cost of living, you know, there's been a lot of this stuff, but weirdly, no one gives a shit. No one gives a shit because everyone feels a bit poorer, which is fair enough. Starmer does his speech indoors because, you know, he's a pussy. But he's the older man. He's the older man. So he's got to be indoors. He's got to be in the warm. You know what I mean? His circulation isn't up there with Rishi's, right? And so he gives his speech, and I don't really hear what Starmer's saying because he says so little. That's the problem, isn't it? The strategy is, and you can fully understand it, is the Tories have so many black marks against their name that he just needs to just occupy a space, don't promise too much, and just sort of soft shoe shuffle your way to number 10, right? But I'm trying to listen. And one of the things that comes through is that he thinks just everything is the Tories' fault. The mortgages, the antisocial behaviour. Your wife, she doesn't like you. Tories, also the Tories. Anything else? Yep. Impotence. Rishi's erectile dysfunction. They just want to pin everything on the Tories. And the problem is that there are loads of problems with our public services underfunded. But I've got quite a literal mind. So if people say that nothing works and everything is broken, I don't know if it's because you have so many arguments in relationships over the years. You know, like when your missus says like, oh, you always say that. You know, or you never wash up. And part of you is thinking, I washed up once last month. You're mistaking an emotional argument for a point of order. Like, now, order. I think you're fine. I'd like to draw my right honourable friend to a period of washing up that occurred. That's not what it's about, right? So maybe I'm a bit foolish for thinking that. But yeah, when they said that nothing works, is that true? What most people think, uk@gmail.com. You look out when you go outside and around. Is this country really on its knees? Are we not prone to a bit of fucking hyperbole? If you were to spend a day in a country that really was on its knees, I don't know. But it's certainly not as good as it was. I think that is both a fair comment and not something that's going to win you an election. Saying, hey, it's not quite as good as it was. One of the things that Starmer says was that he gives certain pleasures about, you know, dignity coming back to politics and maybe politics playing a bit less of a role in your daily lives. I thought, oh, really? Oh, the Labour Party are going to step back, are they? The Labour Party, they're going to be what, small state, right? They're not going to get involved in your life. I mean, New Labour were the most conservative iteration of the Conservative Party ever. And when they left office, I mean, fuck me. In some towns, pretty much everyone worked for the government in some way. It was one of the reasons that when the credit crunch hit, we were so exposed because fucking the public sector had grown just exponentially. So I find that very hard to believe. I mean, if he's saying that, you know, politics won't be in your lives in the sense that we won't do as many scandals and fuck-ups, I think that that's a plausible argument. But the idea that the Labour Party are going to step back and just go into their libertarian phrase, man, I don't see it. And Rishi was straight out of the gate on the campaign trail. You know, he was on LBC, he's on the Today Show. And of course, you know, if you judge his performances by social media, he got eviscerated, trampled, stamped on, shat on, minced into and put in a fucking cottage pie. But you actually listen to these interviews and there is the tetchiness with Rishi, definitely. It's an issue because he does seem to think that he's done enough revision that he should win. He should win on revision. But maybe there are people in his team that seem to think that Rishi is an asset, and I'm not so sure. Just get Rishi out there. More Rishi. Less Rishi, I would argue. I mean, I would get Cameron out and about. Everyone always says, you know, with the Danny Dyer thing, you know, he's sitting there with his trotters up, you know, and like there is a lot of social media antipathy towards Cameron. But when he left office, his approval ratings were one of the best for a prime minister leaving office that there's ever been, which I know sounds odd, but very few people hated David Cameron. It wasn't that emotion, was it? They thought he was posh, they thought he was a twat, do you know what I mean? They thought he took bad decisions, but he never sort of experienced the hatred. So I'd get him out and about. I'd get James Cleverly out and about. He's a good communicator. And, you know, straight up, you know, I watched Peston last night. Cleverly was on. He's very good. On the Labour side, Wes Streeting, you know, he's very match fit. He's popping up on everything these days. He's like, you know, Wes Streeting has now become like one of those young comedians that suddenly burst through. And you're like, where the fuck is on every panel show going, Wes? You know, he's good. But when I look at the two sides of the house, Sunak and Starmer, you know, Starmer slightly edges it as a communicator. David Cameron and David Lammy. They're not giving Lammy much airtime, are they? David Cameron all the way. James Cleverly and Yvette Cooper. James Cleverly, I think, is a better communicator. Wes Streeting and Claire Coutinho. Streeting probably takes the win there. It's fairly even, but, you know, what are you communicating? And the point is, you know, with the record that the Tories have got in office, it doesn't matter how good they are at communicating, it's just very hard for them, isn't it? And every time I play out in my mind, you know, how the public debates will go, particularly with Sunak and Starmer, old SAS, it's just going to be very hard for Sunak, because as many arguments as he can make against Starmer, you know, like, one of them that they need to drop, by the way, is saying that Starmer's a Corbynista, because I think that there are legitimate questions about his duplicity. But I do not think that any of the public look at Keir Starmer and see a Corbynista. I think you should go the opposite way and go, he's just like us. He's like a Tory. So, you know, you might as well vote Tory. I just don't think anyone's buying that he's some secret Corbynista that's going to come in. And I think, what he does in office may be way more left-wing than what he's promising. But I don't think anyone's going to buy that, really. And it's going to be hard for Sunak, because he can create these arguments and he can pin things on Labour, which are legitimate. But at any point, you know, he could go, Sunak could say, we've turned a corner. And Starmer could say, but you originally turned us into a cul-de-sac. You know, like, when people feel poorer, it's just really fucking hard. It's really hard, because he'll just go through that list. He'll go, sewage, Partygate, Liz Truss. They just keep coming. Speaking of Matt Hancock, the public were forced to endure the sight of his hand on that woman's arse. That will not happen under a Labour government. If we grab arse, we're going to grab it with conviction. So, look, I don't see this anything other than a foregone conclusion this election. You know, I do not want to see the Conservative Party obliterated, but I don't see how they close this poll gap of 20-odd points. I don't see what the big idea, the big argument is. I just don't see it happening. I'm going to enjoy the ride. It's like a World Cup, you know. It's like a tournament. I love politics, right? Even when my team, in inverted commas, aren't doing that well, I still enjoy it, right? It's still good content. Speaking of, you know, the football element to it, some people think that the reason that the Tories have gone on this particular date is because it's likely to be, right, bang smack, once the group stages of Euro 2024 have finished and before the quarterfinal. If they have done that, that is actually pretty smart, because they've shown a clear understanding of football there. On recent form, that is when optimism will be at its highest, right? Going into the quarters, you're not doing it like straight after the semis, because you know that you're going to be going to the polls after everyone stayed up till like 11:30 just to watch some England player shank it over the bar in a penalty shootout. But I think that there's some smart in that. It might be nice weather. I don't think any of this is going to change anything. It just might make it a more pleasant experience, you know. Just like, look, you know, Richard, go, look, we gave you an election in the sunshine. But if we're going to take the football analogy here, right, they're doing it during a tournament. The Conservatives at the moment, if you were to look back at major tournaments and England squads over the years, which squad is it most like? I mean, Euro 2000, it was shit, but we had players that were highly rated, so I don't know if you can say that. Obviously, it's not going to match with 96 and 98, you know, or 2018. I think you'd have to go Euro 92. I think you'd have to equate them to Euro 92. Euro 92 is the weirdest squad we've ever taken to a tournament. You know, I think we had Keith Curl, Tony Daly, you know, like just it's a very, very late 80s, early 90s footballers. I think that, you know, if it goes the way of Euro 92, not only will the Tories be struggling for big game players, the Tories could just go out in the group stages and Rishi Sunak could be on the front page of the Sun with a turnip on his head. Okay, so that is the What Most People Think breaking news, the very first one of this election campaign, and I'll keep them coming. I might try and do one a week. I might even do more if there's lots of news. Obviously, we didn't get to talking about the Lib Dems yet because, you know. But just a note, did anybody see that Ed Davey tweeted, like, he was very proud that he'd managed to get a new stairway at the station in Surbiton, which is his constituency? Such a fucking modest ambition. It was really weird. It was like, sorry, is this a prank? It's so weird to be that proud. But we will talk about Ed Davey over the course of the campaign. By the end of it, who knows? Some of us may even know what he sounds like. We'll talk about the SNP, you know, John Swinney. Maybe Labour should have been careful what they wish for. You'd much preferred going into it with Hapless Humza, wouldn't you? Hapless Humza, right? Yeah, no, right? You'd just say something really racist about English people off camera. They smell, you know, just something weird. But I don't know if you're going to get that with John Swinney. But look, it's politics, all right? It's about enjoyment. Let's just enjoy it. I stayed up late last night to watch Robert Peston. If you want to know commitment. So if you want to take this football analogy to its conclusion, right, like it's a tournament, like it's a World Cup, is I've now opened my Panini election sticker book, all right? I'm very much hoping to get the silver ones of Sunak and Starmer. And hey, look, there'll be a lot of Ed Davies knocking around. I think if we were doing swapsies, Ed Davey would be often traded. We'll be right back.